This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham. Marietta McCarty's first book, Little Big Minds, is all about teaching philosophy to kids. The title of the second book, How Philosophy Can Save Your Life, seems self-explanatory, although it could have you asking a question or two. Now, McCarty's third book is provoking not just many questions, but lots of dinner table debate across the Commonwealth and beyond. Titled The Philosopher's Table, the book's supposed to be a guide for rotating food fests in the homes of people who love talking ideas. What the author did not expect was how the idea of talking ideas would appeal to so many under such a wide variety of circumstances. Since ideas are some of our favorite things, we've invited Ms. McCarty back for an update. And if food, friends, and fellowship sound good to you, grab an afternoon snack and prepare to join the conversation right after the news. Great to be with you. I'm Tom Graham, and this is Virginia Insight. The book is titled The Philosopher's Table. The subtitle, How to Start Your Philosophy Dinner Club, Monthly Conversation, Music, and Recipes. The book's author has graciously agreed to a return visit with us. But if just hearing the title gets you thinking about ideas you'd be willing to share, well, we do have phone lines already open at 888-WMRA-TALK. That's 888-967-2825. Marietta McCarty, great to see you back in the Insight studio.
It's nice to be back over the mountain, Tom.
Well, I know we're here to focus primarily, Marietta, on the philosopher's table, but I hope you don't mind if I hark back to one of your previous books for a moment. Remind me, if you would, how philosophy is going to save my life.
Well, first, we know that it needs to. So that's a start, that you need a lifesaver there. With how philosophy can save your life, it's really interesting. And I think I mentioned this when I was here for the broadcast on that book. I didn't choose the title for the book. The publishing house chose the title. But what's interesting is, after reading the book, and I didn't have a title in mind, that's how the editor and her staff felt about the book, that mental clarity has the ability to improve the quality of one's life and to bail you out of difficulty and help you see in new directions and get a fresh start. And so for me, I can certainly say that mental clarity, when I've managed it, has been a true friend to me all of my life, always there, particularly in times of difficulty.
Is that what philosophy does, is creates mental clarity?
For me, it does. I mean, I define philosophy as the art of clear thinking. It's the ability to have a sort of razor-sharp...
Yeah, there's a story about how you came up with it. Back when you were a professor of philosophy...
My first night of teaching.
Piedmont Virginia Community College,
yes.
PVCC.
So my very first night, a rookie...
I love this story.
A rookie standing outside the door of the classroom and seeing the students come in and, you know, are they going to know it's my first night and they've been working all day? Are they tired? Are they going to leave if they don't like something? Are they going to leave at the break? Are they going to stay for 10 minutes? What's going to happen? And so I welcomed them all. And so I began, I really began to be quite a free swinger with teaching philosophy and sharing it because it's so wide open and exhilarating. But that first night I began with the classic definition of philosophy, which is it comes from the Greek and it means the love of wisdom. And a man in the very back row raised one hand almost through the ceiling and his other hand slapped down on his desk and he said, "Lady, you've confused me." And so I thought that, you know, I've said, you know, one sentence in my career, and I've already confused him with the definition of philosophy. But that night going home, and we laughed about it in the classroom, I knew why he didn't like the definition. It didn't really mean anything. And if there's one thing that I loved among the many of my students at the community college, it's that they want something that's going to work for them, that's relevant, that's practical. And so philosophy is that for me. It's always been a tool for me to use in my life so productively and practically. So I thought about it, and I came back the next night, the Monday night class, 7 to 10, and I changed my definition, and I've the definition has stayed with me. And I define philosophy as the art of clear thinking. It's the ability to be able to look at the world, to understand the world, to be able to work on more and more clarity about what ideas mean, what's important and what's not, what's true and what's not, what really matters in the long run, what's important, what our priorities should be.
How do you get there? And what is it about philosophy, about reading philosophers' ideas, that helps get you there?
Well, I think for me, in college, I just listened. And I don't teach that way, and I don't write that way. When I write my books, I want to invite the reader into a conversation with me. I imagine the person there. I'm writing in a way that I think that people actually talk. And so I think that one way you get there is you engage in good, hearty, authentic conversation. I think that a part of what Descartes was a brilliant mind, but in the 17th century France, when he retired to his room as a solitary thinker, he got himself into a lot of trouble because the only thing he could be sure of was that he existed. And I think that what we need is to get out of our rooms and be with each other and have good conversation and spirited conversation. And the more we talk with each other, the better we come to terms with what things might mean, what ideas might mean. Because the world, Tom, I think, is such an interesting place. It's natural beauty and the beauty of differences and similarities among human beings. We have so much to learn from each other if we can listen, not try to prove our point, not worry about being right, and just be exposed to just the tapestry of what it means to be human.
I'm listening.
I know you are. I can tell your listening audience that one reason you're really listening is that you forgot your copy of The Philosopher's Table for this interview.
I didn't forget it. It wasn't where I thought I put it. That's not the same thing.
So you understand the meaning of clear thinking, how that could enhance the quality of your life.
Yeah. But so just a little bit more about this previous book of yours, How Philosophy Can Save Your Life, that your publisher decided that was what the title should be. Is part of what you're saying, Marietta McCarty, is this process that gets you to clear thinking makes life worth living. That's actually the saving of the life.
Yes. Yes. And I find for myself, and I certainly have found for students and in the communication I have with my readers, what I hear at book talks and speaking engagements is the ways in which people have used philosophy to change course, to make better decisions, to sort of recreate what they want from their lives, to interact better with the people in their lives, to branch out. I think that it makes all the difference in the world. The contents of our mind drive all of our actions. What we think motivates what we do. And if there's confusion and clutter in our minds, we're going to have some unfortunate results from that. So how do you do it? It's the work of a lifetime. You just have to find your book, Tom, and then read it, talk with other people, engage people in conversation. And then solitude is great to think about, you know, what really is good living for me? How could I be more kind? How can I persist with grace? How can I enjoy life's simple pleasures more? All topics that I write about in my books, I think those are important things.
So this latest book that you're giving me a hard time about it not being in my office where I thought it was, The Philosopher's Table, it's been almost a year since the last time you were here specifically to talk about that book. So let me ask you if you would to take us through some of the basics that you cover in The Philosopher's Table and what you were trying to accomplish with that particular book.
Yes. I think food, breaking bread, is what brings people together in a way that relaxes them so that they can welcome communication and conversation and tell stories. I think people love to tell and to listen to stories. It's really how we learn. It's what we remember about people. It's not a lecture that a student's going to remember. It's going to be a story that a student or a reader is going to remember. So in The Philosopher's Table, Tom, I have 12 topics that I think are, from my experience, the topics that are of most interest to students and readers, even though they might not call it simple pleasures or spiritual hunger or what about love, chapters in the book. This is what people are really interested in. So I've got 12 topics, and we go around the world. Each month is a different topic in a different place in the world, and we talk about the topic. We have music from that place in the world. We have Brazilian music in June to go with Liberating Education. We've got some bluegrass from Kentucky in August to talk about love. And then we have dinner, and there's suggestions for what the guests can bring to dinner. And then there are recipes to be fixed by the host or by people who are bringing perhaps something that's been suggested for a recipe. So you've got your evening right there. The food is right there.
So what you're trying to do is to get people together at night in people's homes to talk about ideas over delicious food, food related most of the time to the area of the world that connects with the ideas or the topics that you're planning on getting that group of people to talk about.
Yes. And in fact,
evening. Everything's
related. The topic is at a certain time of the year. The country was chosen for a particular reason. Everything is related and held together. I thought it would be just for dinner. There are philosophers' lunch tables and sort of breakfast coffees and all sorts of things happening with the book.
Well, I want to ask you more about that, but we're going to hit the break soon, and we're already getting some calls. So let's go to Charlottesville for the first call. This is Julie. Julie, thanks for joining us on Virginia Insight. Your question or comment for philosopher, author Marietta McCarty, please.
Yes, I was lucky enough to attend Marietta's talk at Commonwealth recently, where there was a dinner, and it was really fun, and it was wonderful, and I got the book and read it.
Julie, this is Commonwealth Restaurant in Charlottesville?
Exactly.
Okay.
And I am hoping to start a dinner club using the book, but I have to say I can do the cooking, I can do the I can press the button on the CD player and play the music, but having Marietta there at the Commonwealth to guide the conversation was amazing. And I'm just wondering, Marietta, if you have any suggestions for those of us who are novice philosophers and how we can start the discussion or how to guide people through the topics so that we can really focus in and make these dinner parties about philosophy.
Well, Julie, I'm a novice philosopher too, so I can relate to that. Everyone is a novice philosopher. When I look back at my first two books, the meaning and what I've written and the experience and my take on it all has new meaning to me because of circumstances changing in all of our lives. So I think what you have to do is just realize that there's no right way to do this. And I've written the book in a way that invites you. I give you a conversation topic if you need it for dinner. And there's a short amount of reading to be done, 10, 12 pages in a 7x7 square book. And so if people have done the reading, then I think, and the food is good and they're candles on the table, perhaps some fresh flowers, you're not going to have any trouble having a conversation about mental clarity and what it means. Or, for example, I heard from a lot of people who said when they talked about persistence and grace, that for many diners, they had never considered those two things going together, that you could persist with grit in life and do it gracefully. And so that topic itself is one that could take you to dessert. So just go ahead. You don't need me there because you've got my book. And you go ahead and get the pots boiling and have the people over to dinner.
Okay, I'll do it. I'm looking forward to it. Thank you.
Well, Julie, we'll hope to hear back from you about how it goes.
Okay.
Thank you so much for calling us here on Virginia Insight. If you listening have a question or comment for our guest, Marietta McCarty, we've got some other phone lines open at 888-WMRA-TALK. That's 888-967-2825. Her latest book, The Philosopher's Table. We're going to talk much more about it, but we've got to pause for a break first. Oops.
What I Am from Edie Brickell. That probably relates to the subject of philosophy. Our guest, philosophy guru and education consultant, Marietta McCarty. Her latest book titled The Philosopher's Table, How to Start Your Philosophy Dinner Club, Monthly Conversation, Music, and Recipes. Marietta, my guess is that you probably would have preferred that we took a later part of the song. Early in the song there, we heard Ms. Brickell referring to philosophy as the talk on the cereal box, but later in the song, she says philosophy is a walk on the slippery rocks.
Yes. I got that quote for years from college students at the end of their papers. Philosophy is a walk on the slippery rocks because you're not so sure anymore about what you thought. You're not so sure about preconceived notions and opinions that you have, or that a certain lifestyle is right and another lifestyle is wrong, or that people from this culture or this part of the country or whatever live a certain way. You're not so sure, so everything feels kind of slippery. And uncertainty is a big part of philosophy. A little discomfort is a part of being open with a mind that's ready to receive new information every day of your life.
So to you listening to this conversation, maybe you're familiar with the saying, the more I learn, the more I understand how little I know. Over the years, I'm curious, have you felt that you've come to know more answers, or maybe felt like you just come up with better questions? Willing to share your observations with us? Our phone number here on Virginia Insight, 888-WMRA. Talk, well, that's the memory tool. In all numbers, it's 888-967-2825. Or if you prefer, you can post to us on the Virginia Insight Facebook page, where we are listed as WMRA's Virginia Insight. I think we're going to a phone call now with Mary Catherine Froelich, who's with Marietta, a bookstore, Plus, in Waynesboro, that you're particularly familiar with. Mary Catherine, thank you for joining us on Virginia Insight.
Oh, thank you for asking me.
So you manage and are co-owner of Stone Soup Books on West Main Street in Waynesboro. Is that right?
Yes, yes.
And you've had some experience with Ms. McCarty.
Yes. We actually thought Marietta might have written the book thinking about Stone Soup.
I did. It was just for you.
We had a philosopher's table we hosted in March, where we took about 17 people, journeyed to Burma, talking about persistence and grace, and Marietta helped lead that conversation.
And yours is a really quite special kind of bookstore, I understand, Mary Catherine. Tell us about this establishment in Waynesboro.
Well, we're called Stone Soup because we do make soup here as well. So we have locally sourced food, combine that with good books, and combine that with people who sit at a table and talk about things and talk about ideas.
And I understand the setup is, and I'm embarrassed to say I have not yet been in your store, but what I've been told about it is that it's set in, well, describe it to us.
Well, we're going to remedy that and send you an invite to come visit us here in Waynesboro, in downtown Waynesboro. But we're set in the downtown in an 1895 farmhouse. So there are separate rooms that host all kinds of books and tables. And then there's an outdoor garden patio, which also hosts folks sitting and talking and birds singing.
And we're going to have yet another get-together in May and talk about simple pleasures. And Mary Catherine and I hope that we'll be in the garden for that and reprise what we did that was so much fun in March, because out of this cafe set in the bookstore was delicious Asian curry and mango tart, which were things that were talked about in the book. So it took us straight there. And so we'll have Greek food to celebrate May in Greece.
Mary Catherine, did I hear you say that the topic the first time that you did this in March was Persistence and Grace,
mm-hmm.
which was something that Marietta had actually mentioned a little earlier in the hour. Tell us what you remember hearing people say about that topic.
I think the most interesting thing is that there was a wide range of people who were attracted to talk, to come and eat and listen. And it was a simple question about, you know, where grace has been in your life or where you've been touched. And the conversations just kept rolling. Our dishwasher even commented about, you know, these folks really have a good time. So it crossed all kinds of boundaries from gender to political division and that type of thing, where people wanted to talk and discuss their ideas and their experiences.
I love the comment from the dishwasher that day, Mary Catherine, because wherever I go, that's what people say. They wonder, you know, are they watching a football game? What's going on with all those people with that raucous kind of laughter and,
right.
and good conversation? And no, they're talking about ideas and sharing. I think I loved at your event how people talked about what had happened in their lives, times that they had persisted through difficulty. And we had a lot of conversation about kindness and the power of kindness in our lives and how it can essentially move mountains in one's life to be exposed to kindness. And it was a wonderful time.
Yeah. The connections are the things that you could hear kind of being woven in conversation and in food and all of that. And it was this group who was also pushing to say, when are we going to do this again? And what a great thing to have happening here in Waynesboro, right here in our community.
Tell me if you have any thoughts at the moment, and I realize I'm putting you on the spot, what you feel about the idea of persistence and grace. As Marietta said a little earlier, that's a phrase that has a couple of concepts that you don't often see together.
Oh, that is a good question. And it is something when we first started talking, when I talked to Marietta, I said it's the most perfect combination of things to be discussing here. As a bookseller, I feel like we embody the word persistence. we are darn persistent in making sure books continue to come out and be available to people. And in grace, I showed Marietta when she was here, we have an old tree out back on the patio. I keep trying to get someone to gauge it, but I think it's over 200 years old, and it just keeps putting forth branches. It has a hollow in the center, and you see squirrels go down there and all kinds of things. I know it stood there for the Battle of Waynesboro, the Civil War battle, and it still puts forth that new life every spring, and it's kind of a reminder to me of grace.
Me too. Don't keep it there when I come back in May.
That's the persistence part too.
Yes.
It's not going to go away. It's not giving up.
And Mary Catherine, do I understand correctly that you are co-owner of this store/restaurant in part because this is actually an employee-owned establishment?
Yes. I'm one of the founding owners, and we have, right now, we have 7 owners that have, it's a kind of a fairly easy process to become an owner, but it's also a hard process. It's a 3-year type of working here in less than normal wages, I would say, and showing compassion and kindness and going outside the box. And that's the simple formula to becoming an owner here.
Mary Catherine Froelich, co-owner and manager of Stone Soup Books in Waynesboro, thank you so very much for making time for us on Virginia Insight.
Thank you so much.
See you, Mary Catherine.
All right, we'll see you in May.
Marietta McCarty, author, educator, consultant, and professional conversation instigator, is our guest. Her latest book is titled The Philosopher's Table. This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham. If you have ideas about philosophy, ideas about talking about ideas, we'd love to hear from you at 888-967-2825. We're going next, I believe, to Charlottesville. Erin, thanks for joining us. Your question or comment for Marietta McCarty, please.
Hi, this is Erin Huey-Cummers, and I just wanted to say how much we're enjoying using the Philosopher Tables book this year, and we've been doing it all year since January, and it's just been a wonderful experience.
And Erin, talk about, I've loved receiving emails from you that describe your gatherings shortly after they've been held, and you've done some had such nice personal touches to your meals. One of them is that children are included, which I think is wonderful. But what else about the meals? Everyone has been different, and one thing that interests me is that you and Dave host each time. You don't rotate who's hosting the meals, and that's so that you can control the guest list and get to see people that you haven't seen for a while and that sort of thing. So can you sort of point to some special touches that you've given the different months and some favorite moments that you've had during the meals? I'm really glad you called.
Yeah, absolutely. So so Dave and I decided to host the meal at our home each time because we were interested in cultivating a sense of community across a broad number of people that we wanted to spend more time with during the year, but just hadn't been able to fit that in previously. So instead of having a smaller group of people that shared responsibility of hosting, we made a list of about 60 or 70 people that we wanted to have dinner with over the course of the year and have not only dinner, but set up some structures for really meaningful dinner time conversations.
Am I on that list, Erin?
Of course you are. Yes,
I'm at the bottom of the list because I have not heard from you.
We are really looking forward.
Erin a hard time. You're supposed to give me a hard time, not the callers a hard time.
Oh, okay.
I'm sorry, Erin. Go ahead.
We figured we'd try to get some practice first before we invite
you, Miriam.
So it's been really interesting. We've invited different combinations of friends and acquaintances, and each time the meal has had a really different flavor, so to speak, not just because of the different philosopher and culture that we're honoring, but also because of the different group of people and their style of conversation that emerges. And it's been a real lesson in the art of conversation. Some nights we are more involved in drawing people out and kind of continuing the thread of conversation throughout the evening. Other times our guests surprise us with really startling insights. They bring personal stories to the table, and the conversation sort of effortlessly interweaves between personal topics and the larger philosophical topic at hand. And I would say across all of these dinners, the commonality is that we've come away with greater insight on the topic and also just, more perspectives with which to approach, our own lives. So it's been really rewarding. We have included kids. Dave's son, Parker, has been involved, and we've had other guests with children. And we actually have a practice at the beginning of having all of our guests write on a note card that we place at their table setting a question that they might have about the text. So in case the conversation lags, everyone has a question that they can bring out. And so many times the kids have been involved in writing their philosophical questions down as well. And that's just been wonderful. Even if they drift off to play later during the dinner, it's a great way for everyone to come together at the beginning.
Erin, I apologize if this is going to put you on the spot. And it's okay if you can't think of anything right away, but I've got to ask, you mentioned a few moments ago that sometimes people come up with real touching stories or profound insights. Do you recall any of those that are not so confidential that you could repeat one here?
Sure. That's a great question. And, there are so many that, I made note of at the time and might be hard to pull up, but I will say that around the topic of single tasking, which was that topic in January, so many of us had examples of areas in our lives where we tend to be doing multiple things at once, and we really struggled, and I think succeeded to a certain extent in that conversation, in trying to find ways in our lives when we could just slow down and do one thing at a time. And I think one of the things that I came away from that conversation with was maybe single tasking isn't just one more thing to put on my list of things to do, if you know what I mean, that it's actually a state of mind and a way of approaching each thing during the day. So that was something that I hadn't quite put together before our conversation and something that all the participants, comments and things, the way the conversation flowed really helped me gain a new understanding.
That's really perfect. And I think that when I was writing about single tasking, thinking about it, it is a practice. it's a way of being in the world. It isn't something that you do certain times of the day. But I think what I find is that the more you concentrate and focus on the task at hand, the more natural and almost automatic that becomes. And then there's more efficiency and more relaxation, more breath in our lives. So,
Marietta,
that's a good one.
The term single tasking that you use in your book, The Philosopher's Table, I take it is almost self-explanatory.
Well, the computer doesn't think so because it will not accept single tasking as a word.
Okay, so give us your definition.
Single tasking is 100% concentration and focus on what's immediately before you. It is literally doing one thing at a time with what I would call devotion. And the computer loves multitasking. That passes the test just fine. So the squiggly lines don't come under multitasking. And multitasking, I think, and Aaron, I'm sure that you've found this, that's actually a misnomer. We can't do more than one thing at a time. But what we can do is a series of sort of half-done events, one right after another, but it is not possible to do two things at one time. And so single-tasking is being present to the moment at hand.
And being totally focused, absorbed in just what you're doing in this moment.
Yes. And what's interesting, I met a long time ago as a student at Piedmont, and she doesn't remember this. I mentioned it to her recently, but she said that she made a practice of going and introducing herself to professors at the beginning of each semester. And she said, I'd like to know what you expect of me, and I'll tell you what I expect of you. And it's most novel. And so I went first and said what I expected of students. And she said, what I expect, what I would like is for you to be present to me as a teacher. And that's an incredible thing to hear, because for Erin to say, what I want you to do is to be present, means that when she is in the office or I'm in the classroom with her, that's all I am. So I'm not looking at my computer. I'm not looking at notes. I'm not tying my shoe. I'm not doing anything but being attentive to how she's carrying herself, how she appears, what she's saying.
Erin, thank you so very much for spending some time with us here on Virginia Insight.
Thank you so much. And if I could just add one thing, Tom, it is to say that, you know, Marietta obviously should demonstrate presence in such a wonderful way in the classroom. But I want to suggest that creating a space in our lives for conversation with other people around a topic, as Marietta's book allows us to do, is really an opportunity to be present with each other. And it's been such a gift in that way. So thank you. Thank you so much.
We have to pause for a break, but we'll be back in just a bit more than 1 minute. Author Marietta McCarty is our guest. Her latest book, the focus of this hour's discussion, The Philosopher's Table. We're just hearing Sarah Bareilles talk about bravery being associated with talking honestly. Do you have to be courageous, Marietta, to talk about philosophy?
I think so. I think to be open to change, it's a somewhat a feeling of vulnerability to express innermost thoughts and to be comfortable knowing that people will respect what you have to say. All that, Tom, I think takes a certain bit of a leap. And I think it's so richly rewarded in the way people appreciate opening up and having someone to talk to, as Mary Catherine mentioned, just the way that relationships formed among people who didn't know each other at this lunch table in Waynesboro. I was doing an interview with a...
Okay, but hold on a second. Have you ever had trouble being brave? I mean, in the years that I've known you, Marietta, you don't come across to me as timid or intimidated at all.
Well, there are topics that I think for anyone, and this is certainly true for me, that are very personal. You asked the most recent caller, Erin, is there something you would be comfortable telling us about an insight that you gained from a dinner party that's not confidential or whatever? And there may be things that Erin realized about herself and her future that she didn't choose to share on air and maybe hasn't completely formulated for herself. So for me, yes, philosophy is often a walk on a slippery rock, as the song says, because I'm going to learn something that's going to make me change my worldview yet again, another time.
There's this famous quote that I think you and I actually discussed the first time you were on the show many years ago. That's attributed to Eleanor Roosevelt, but I don't know if it's apocryphal or not. But the quote was, poor minds talk about people. Average minds talk about events. Great minds talk about ideas. There's kind of a dig in that quote at many people who spend a lot of time gossiping about
yes.
other people. But I wonder sometimes if we engage in that, if we don't talk about the kind of high ideas that you've been promoting in all of your books, encouraging people to discuss, because it does take courage that you do go out on the limb when you start talking about what you think is important in life.
Well, yes, and I mentioned actually gossip in the Philosopher's Table. Epicurus in ancient Greece warned about the danger of gossip because it doesn't do anything but produce harmful consequences. And he was into life's simple pleasures. So when I think of high ideas, I wouldn't want anyone to think that we're talking about something abstract that is difficult to comprehend. What I'm suggesting, for example, just one, is that we need to rethink the consumer mentality that we have and the acquisition of material possessions and perhaps look at the simple pleasures that are abundant in life and free and take time, but are fulfilling and last. A good conversation, a friendship, a memory, a memorized poem, a song you really love, whatever that may be, a walk in the woods. So that, to me, rearranging our priorities, that takes some courage and that takes some rethinking. And yes, I find it. One thing that I find, when you ask the question about difficult for me, I really feel it whenever I have a student or a reader who will talk about how they were rather unraveled by their exposure to thinking about things in a new way, that to have their lifelong beliefs and sort of foundation challenged in some way. But what's healthier than that? If you're spending too much time in your life misdirecting it and it's not taking you towards joy and good relationships, then it's time for a change.
Her previous titles include How Philosophy Can Save Your Life, as well as Little Big Minds, Sharing Philosophy with Kids. But it is her latest book, The Philosopher's Table, that we are mostly focusing on this hour with author Marietta McCarty. This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham. We've got a few more minutes to fit in calls, so if you have a question or comment for Ms. McCarty, we'd love to hear from you at 888-WMRA-TALK. Earlier in the hour, we had a caller, I think it was Julie, who mentioned something about an event that went on at a Commonwealth Restaurant in Charlottesville.
Yes.
Well, we've managed to get the manager of Commonwealth Restaurant on the line with us. I believe this is Justin Butler. Justin, thank you for joining us here on Virginia Insight. So you had some sort of event that was connected to this book, The Philosopher's Table.
We did. We had a luncheon back in February that was on the focus of mental clarity.
Now, wait a minute. You had a luncheon.
Yes.
But don't I understand correctly that the Commonwealth Restaurant and Sky Bar is usually only open for dinner.
That's correct.
You're open at night, what, from like 5 until midnight or something?
Yeah, we're open. The bar's open at 3, and we usually stay up until about 2 a.m. But, yeah, we don't open for lunch normally, just on Sundays for brunch.
So what was it that inspired you to get people into your restaurant for a special meal to talk about philosophy?
Well, I actually took one of Ms. McCarty's classes, the philosophy class, when I was in school, and she came to me and told me about her book, and we just thought it would be a great idea of something to do during the day at the restaurant.
Justin,
and there wasn't a lot of people running around.
Justin also likes the idea that he's included in the book. And so the fact that I refer to Justin and a couple of anecdotes, he was my student.
Was he a difficult student?
He was a delightful student. And he was one of the students that found his world turned rather upside down by exposure to philosophy. He said, I'm questioning everything, absolutely everything, and I love it. So Justin is a perfect example. And we're going to continue with these philosophers' lunch tables. We have one scheduled for July and one for November because, Justin, do you remember how sort of boisterous and excited people were just to have a chance to talk about mental life?
Absolutely. And there's a lot of people that were very upset that they couldn't make it because we just had such short notice on this one. So having it spread out for the next two times is going to give a lot more people a chance to come to these.
So what is it about philosophy, Justin, that appeals to a guy who runs a restaurant?
Well, I mean, if it's anybody that runs a restaurant, I've been in and out of this. I got out of the business for a little while, and that's when I was going back to school, and my life was kind of upside down. My wife was the one earning the money, and I was in school and taking care of the kids. And I learned that we were taking, you know, that wasn't a bad thing. And I walked into it thinking it was, and got to learn a lot more about myself in a class that I accidentally took.
He did accidentally take it. I learned recently, Tom, that Justin thought he was signing up for a science course, and then he thought he was in psychology class, and it's only recently he's discovered that he was taking philosophy.
Justin, thanks so much for spending some time with us on Virginia Insight today.
Thank you.
We have this post here on our Virginia Insight Facebook page, Marietta, that I kind of need to edit as I'm going along because it's a little long. My significant partner and I have been enjoying using Marietta's book as a knowledgeable guide to prompt great conversation, community, and food. In some ways, the book is very much like the director's notes that a playwright provides. A setting is provided for the actors, as are suggestions for music, movies, and other informative and relevant cultural pointers. Each chapter is a rich new opportunity to explore. And that's from David. I imagine you're going to want to send David a check here.
No, I would like you to read the whole thing all over again and not edit anything out is what I'd really like.
If anybody wants to see it can go to the Virginia Insight Facebook page and read David's whole post. So this is a guidebook to encourage people to get together and talk ideas.
In their own way. I mean, there are all sorts of different ways of doing it. I've done a workshop in a Pilates studio about single tasking. I'm going to go back to True Pilates in Charlottesville in November to talk about adapting to change, the chapter called A Slow Dance with Nature. I love hearing, I've heard from a number of readers who've said, I can't cook, but I've given the book to all my friends who can. And so they figured out a way to get people together. And just all, the variety of ways that the book is being used pleases me so much. Ways, and I didn't think of the philosopher's lunch table at a restaurant when I was writing this book. So it's been a pleasure for me. Anytime you write a book and you find ways that it's being used to benefit people's lives that you didn't anticipate is beautiful. I remember being in Baltimore at a book talk for Little Big Minds, which is about sharing philosophy with children. And a woman came up afterwards and said that she was using the book because she runs a women's shelter. And they were using the poetry from the book and benefiting from it. And with How Philosophy Can Save Your Life, remember the email that I got from Perth in Australia from someone who worked at a prison. And he wanted to use that book as the book club for people who were in the book club at the jail. And so, I mean, that is the greatest reward. And I think for me with the Philosopher's Table, Tom, something that has been a surprise for me, and this is pretty amazing, is that with the first two books, I was still teaching full time, and I didn't have as much time to give talks, to go to dinners, to go to New Orleans, to do this, to go here and do that. And so I am so filled with just gratitude and humility at the ways I've seen people enjoying the book and coming together. The book is doing exactly what I anticipated it doing in so many ways that I didn't anticipate it. And it has just been a great experience for me. And I, at one book talk, I encountered a former student from when I first started teaching. His name is Robert. And he said, I remember people say, what did you learn in our class? And he said, I think the thing that I took away from your classes is I can always hear your voice saying, pay attention to this. Pay attention to this. And with the Philosopher's Table, because I have the time and I can listen and I can be present, I'm paying attention to everything, what's being said, the responses to it, and I'm very, very grateful for it.
Why do you think, Marietta McCarty, that people don't get together more to talk about ideas?
I think that they perhaps don't know how easy it is or how beneficial it is to talk about love, let's say, what it means. And I think that because of our educational system and our culture, we have this, we have true false questions and multiple choice questions. And so you're either right or wrong. And philosophy is not that. Philosophy is about delving together and digging into the meaning of love. And so we're not used to talking about ideas. And so that's one reason. And the other reason is, I think that a phrase that I have a hard time listening to is, you know, I'm really busy. I'm too busy. I just wrote a blog titled Busy is Boring, because we are, a lot of what we're doing with our busyness, we're manufacturing. And I think we can also manufacture the time to come together and to be together. So we have to do something about this sort of recording, this device that keeps spitting out the word busy, busy, too busy. So that would be my answer. To do something about the busyness and to realize the value of talking about something. That's what children love about philosophy, Thomas. There are no right answers. We're trying to come to a better understanding together of love, of clarity, of courage, living courageously, of how to adapt to change. That's a topic in the book. Every single human being deals with how to adapt to change or not and suffer the consequences.
I'm really caught on this idea that what you are encouraging is courage. Because I have a sense, having read all three of your books now, that talking about the kinds of things that you encourage people to talk about takes some bravery, at least to get started, to get over the hump.
Yes, because you don't want, people aren't comfortable with change. And so maybe what you're going to say, what you're going to realize is, from what you've said, is that you've been on the wrong track and you don't want, you know, it's like the old testing in school. You don't want to be wrong, and there is no wrong. You're simply telling a story. You're doing your best to understand, and how you've thought about love isn't wrong. There just needs to be some adapting and some changes made. So does it take courage? Sure. But it's well worth it. And it takes courage for me. It took courage to write this book. Every single chapter was emotional to write.
Our guest has been teacher, philosopher, education consultant, and author, Marietta McCarty. Her latest book, titled The Philosopher's Table. Marietta, thank you so very much for making time for us.
Tom, I'll be back. You know that.
I hope so. Virginia Insight's executive producer is Matt Bingay. Our associate producers, Terry Ward and Bob Levicky. Some of our break music supplied by Robert Jospe and Inner Rhythm. You can find postings of Virginia Insight on the Virginia Insight tab at WMRA.org. And when you get to the page for today's broadcast, you will find links to more information about Ms. McCarty's work. And if you go to the Virginia Insight Facebook page and click like, you'll get a whole bunch more information about these broadcasts there as well. Thanks so much for tuning in for this edition. I'm Tom Graham. Hope we can get together again soon for more insight.